from here on in, it really gets grim. For 99% of the people still left at this point, they're possessed with one thing: finishing. They're saying to themselves, if I can be standing at the finish, I've won. And they're right. But for the gifted few, for our 1% that are still competing, that are still racing, they're more than standing. They're wondering, can I catch that guy up there? What about the guys behind me? Are they going to get me? Are they coming on me? Are they picking up on me? Can I get him? Because let me tell you something. This is it. The last hour of this triathlon, on the pavement at 110 degrees, that's when we're going to find out who the hell the Iron Man really is.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by ToughManTry.com, Everyone.org, that's EveryWN.org. Our first half marathon and 5K event coming up on July 24th up in the Bay Area. RunCatalina.com. We've got the Catalina Inco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. And, of course, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And you can subscribe to our newsletter at Babbittville.com/newsletter. Our next guest, we're talking a guy with 17 pro wins, 10 course records, 4 wins at Ironman 70.3 Boulder, win at 2010 Ironman Wisconsin, which I think was his first ever full Ironman. Mr. Joe Gambles joins us. Joe, how the heck are you?
Hi, Bob. Yeah, I'm well, thank you. Thanks
good, good. So was Wisconsin your first full Ironman?
It was, yeah. It was back in 2010, and it went well, and yeah, I got the Ironman bug just from that race, so I'm still going after those Ironman titles.
Isn't that funny? You start to go, wow, this isn't that hard. What the hell? First time out, I win. This sport's pretty easy.
Yeah, it did go a bit too well the first time, because then my next race after that over the Ironman distance was Kona, and that was a little bit different. So it was a bit of a step up, but yeah, it was good to win on debut. At that time, there wasn't many people that have actually done that, so it was pretty special.
You know, and when I look back at your career, you've been doing this since you were, you know, not as a pro, but you were 16 years old. What got you into triathlon?
I guess it goes back to my dad actually raced them in the 80s, and I used to go watch him race, and then I took part in a kids' triathlon when I was 12, and I won my first one, and basically switched over from running at that time to triathlon, as I was doing a lot better at triathlon than I was at running. So, yeah, and then I just kept going and progressed through the Australian junior development program, and then sort of settled in at half Ironman or sort of distance when I was, like, 23, 24, and still going at 34.
So did you, early on, were you thinking Olympics? Were you thinking ITU-style racing?
Yeah. I sort of started racing elite level or professional as it was switching from, like, non-drafting to the drafting format. So, yeah, I gave it a go. My swim was never great, so
right,
that was a big issue. So I did learn to ride the bike pretty quick over the first sort of 10, 15 miles to catch up, which has helped me now.
Yes.
But it took a lot out of the tank in ITU-style racing. And my runners never had great top-end speed, but I've always been strong. So basically I did my first half Ironman and when I was maybe 23, 24, just to see if I liked it and loved it, got second, ran 1:18 off the bike, my first ever half.
Wow.
And decided this was a better fit for me. And, yeah, haven't looked back. I've still kept doing Olympic distance races now and then. It's really good for the speed, I think, and especially half Ironman these days, it isn't slow. So you need that need that change of speed and that upper end to be able to keep up with the guys these days.
So, what was there a point when you first jumped into the 70.3? The hard part about the ITU, and a lot of folks don't quite know that, you know, there's such a huge difference between the ITU style of racing where you're allowed to draft, and then when you move to that Ironman 70.3 and it's non-drafting, it's a totally different game. It's, you know, I always say that in a draft legal race, the best guy doesn't always win, but usually in a non-drafting race, the best guy or best gal of the day is going to win the race. Did you like the fact that you really controlled your own destiny when you went to the start line of a 70.3 race?
Yeah, definitely. I love that. It's basically, it's down to you at the end of the day. It
right.
doesn't really matter so much tactically. It's more if you can put together three strong disciplines in a row and you can do well. You can have a weaker swim and you can make up for that on the bike and then put yourself in contention for the run. Whereas ITU, I think it's becoming less and less, because the bike's becoming faster and faster over the ITU distance. Those guys can really ride these days, whereas back when it sort of started, it seemed to be a little bit like
yep.
everyone seemed to be spinning around a little bit, waiting for people to make the move. Whereas now it's
full
like
gas.
See someone like Alistair Brownlee that
yeah.
wants to come out of the water at the front and he wants to keep the pressure on until it's last man standing, which I really admire the way he races. It's fantastic. And same with Javier Gomez. You don't see them sitting in the back of the pack waiting for the run. They're
no.
pretty aggressive on the bike these days. And they're making the courses more technical and also more challenging with hills and hotter conditions. So it's making for definitely harder racing.
Was there a point where you realized, or was there one particular race where you realized, okay, I think I can make a living at this? It's because, you know, there's a lot of guys who come in and they're a pro for a while. It's sort of a nice break between college and a real life, right?
Yep.
But there must have been a point where you decided, okay, this is where I'm going to put all my effort because I'm having success here.
Yeah, I guess. Look, I went to university or college back in Australia, and I was racing elite level then. And then I went to Europe, I guess, in 2005 and did a few years over there racing some non-drafting, raced for a German team in Bundesliga, raced for a French team in the French Grand Prix. But the first year I did that, I came away with a maxed out credit card and had to come back to Australia over the Australian summer to pay it off. But I went back the next year, and I think I only maybe was in debt by about $2,000 that year. So I was starting to move in the right direction. The following year, I think I broke even with my prize money and being able to travel and race around Europe. And at that point, I was like, wow, it's getting pretty tough. Look, I don't know how much more I can improve. So I went back to Australia and sort of started working, doing some coaching and personal training, and then I got talked into moving to Boulder for 2008. And from that point, I had a couple of wins that year, and I got supported by the Team Timex,
Tim
Brown over there. Took me on halfway through the year, which was really amazing of him, because I didn't have any sponsors. And then I got picked up by K-Swiss, and then, now I'm here. So it was at that point where I just committed to coming over to America and just, it was all or nothing. I was ready
right.
to quit, I guess, at the end of 2007 and just go back, go to get a real job, I guess.
Yeah.
I still wanted to keep racing triathlon, but I just thought I wasn't good enough. But I thought I'll give it one more year and put everything into it. And that was 2008. And I haven't looked back since.
There was a point where there wasn't a lot of racing in Australia after the International Triathlon Grand Prix, when that whole thing went away. And a lot of the athletes, I remember talking to Craig Alexander, Chris McCormick, was like, okay, if we want to make a living, we've got to go to Europe or we got to go to the U.S. And again, you're a young guy at that point when you're 22,
yeah.
23 years old. That's a scary thing to get on a plane, fly to a foreign country, because it's not like Australia's next door to anything. When you're going to Europe or you're going to the U.S., you're committed. You're going to be there for 3, 4, 5, 6 months. and you're dealing with language, you're dealing with food, you're dealing with, you know, people you don't know. How hard was that part for you?
I guess I was actually born in England and moved to Australia when I was 3 years old. So I've actually got a lot of family still in England.
Yeah.
So I guess I didn't go and race in England much. I did a couple of races, but I guess I had a bit of support over there. My older half-sister actually was living there at the time, and I have a lot of uncles and aunties and cousins that still live there. And also had one of my best friends come over with me, and we actually borrowed my uncle's car in England. This is 2004.
Yeah.
Drove it. He lent this car to us and said, yeah, it's yours. We took it over on the boat over to France, drove into Italy in two nights. I raced every weekend in Italy for 7 weeks straight. And basically we lived out of youth hostels or, backpackers. And I, raced an Olympic distance every weekend for 7 weeks. And over the summer I did 15 races in 17 weeks. And I still, I made a loss, but I had the support of my friend, and I managed to go and see some of my family and stuff. So that definitely helped.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's exciting. Yeah. Like I was 24 and I was meeting other triathletes from all around Europe, and, it just seemed to be what you did. If you wanted to, you had people like Craig Alexander and Cam Brown and people that I idolized coming over to do that. So that was just the norm. That's what you did. And that was, and then same with someone like Craig Walton, who's from my home state, Tasmania in Australia. I watched him win LA Triathlon Chicago so many times. And I was like, well, I've got to get over to America. That looks amazing. And it's non-drafting and it's really hard, fast. And it's the best overall athlete wins. Because he wasn't a great runner, but he was an exceptional swim biker. So I saw that, you can be done. You don't just have to do the ITU-style racing. So I guess it was paved the way by those sort of athletes that I looked up to. And I was fortunate enough to race like people like Craig Walton and Greg Welsh before they retired.
Right.
And Craig Alexander's still racing.
Isn't that amazing? And still racing and still winning.
It's crazy. He's just such a competitor, and he just loves to train, and he just enjoys the lifestyle. And full credit to him. And he says he's going to race world championships in Australia, which he'd be silly not to with the form he's got at the moment. So I'm excited to race him in September.
Well, you know what's cool about that is he's not thinking about Kona anymore. So he can focus on speed, and he's such a technician and a tactician.
He is.
That when
That's
he decides
exactly right.
he's going to focus on this, you know that he's going to come to the starting line ready to rock.
I know. We're going to have to, I think, shake him on the swim and the bike, I think.
You don't want him around. You don't want to look over at him at mile 11 and have Craig Alexander sitting there with a smile on his face.
No, definitely not. he's the ultimate competitor, and he's as you said, a fantastic technician. You don't hold the Kona record being sloppy out there. His run form is impeccable, especially for a triathlete, for an Ironman. Like, he's just so strong and doesn't weaken, which is he's won a lot of races because of it.
So for a lot of our listeners, when we say, Bundesliga and racing in Germany, people might not understand how big the sport is. How big the sport is there. And talk a little bit about the clubs and how important that is to each of those little cities, their team.
Yeah, definitely. So you have in Germany, I guess Germany's probably triathlon's the biggest in Germany out of all the European countries, I'd say. Where you've got Ironman Frankfurt, and which I'm actually racing this year, and Challenge Roth, and and you've got World Cups in Hamburg. Which
right,
the whole city shuts down to watch these events.
Thousands of spectators.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know Challenge Roth, where you finished fourth in 2014. That race has probably 100,000 spectators, especially 60, 70,000 of them on Solar Hill. And then Hamburg is crazy. They do, a number of races over a number of days. And there's age group races, there's pro races, but the crowds are just ridiculous.
yeah, the whole, like, the town or the city, and they just shut down to support it. And, like, Ross, for example, like, it goes through, I don't know how many small towns or villages, but the whole community gets behind that event, and they know, they're, like, huge fans, and they know the athletes, and they they're all excited, like, in the months leading into this event, and they're just, the community's right behind it, and it's just, it's a great way to set a great example for the kids and to live a healthy and active lifestyle, and, yeah, then to showcase some of the best athletes in the world in their hometown, and they just really embrace it. It's amazing, and that whole culture, the European culture of endurance racing, they just love to see people, yeah, just suffer and just really give it their all, like the Tour de France, like Ironman and, yeah, triathlon in general is just, it's big there, and it's great to see.
So when I look at, you know, you've had so many wins with, you know, Rev 3, with Timberman, and Syracuse, and obviously Boulder four times in a row. 2014, fourth in Roth, fourth in St. George, fourth in Oceanside, sixth at 70.3 Worlds. Those are consistent results. But I know last year was not your favorite year. And it's like one of those things, sometimes just things just steamroll, right? You get a little bit of it, you get an injury. Did you get hit by a car?
Yeah, that was, I actually came off pretty well. That was just the last nail in the coffin for 2015.
That's one of those years you want to toss out.
I was fine, but yeah, it was, that's the year I had. That sort of summed it up in the end. Like, just, yeah, it was just one I'd rather move on from in many ways. I think there's many things that I guess sort of caused my season to a little bit unravel. I still didn't have a terrible year. I still won a race. I still won Challenge to Lou. I got second in triathlon de Gerardmer in France against a really competitive field. I was third in 51-50 Zurich. So I didn't have a terrible year, but I was never healthy, and I never was happy with my own personal performance, I guess. I just carried a niggle. And I think it was just, I didn't really have a proper break at the end of 2014.
Yeah, you did Ironman. You raced Kona at the end of the year.
Yeah,
then you jumped right into what? You jumped right into Dubai.
I did two races. I also did a race back home in Australia. I did Western Sydney 70.3, where I got second to Josh Amberger.
Right.
And then I backed up the following weekend and was doing pretty well at Ironman Western Australia until 10 miles of the run, and my foot played up. And basically, and then that day or that week is when they announced the Triple Crown, and I was like, well, I'll be in Europe. It's a short trip to Dubai. I'll do that. And it just, I think I got a bit greedy, which I think a lot of athletes are probably finding this now. You just can't race 365 days a year.
Right.
You've got to have a break, and you've got to let yourself recover and just mentally have a break as well. So I think chasing that and not really having a break. I was riding the train on Christmas Day in 2014, and it's just, it's not right. I've always had a good break and then had a good 3 month, 4 month base block leading into a season, and that's how I've raced well. I didn't get that year, and it backfired badly.
Now, what do you...
For a year, I basically had a niggle in my foot that I just couldn't shake, and it wasn't serious. It just wouldn't... My body just wouldn't heal itself.
What do you learn from that? Because you'd had so much... You'd had really nothing but success, right? All these years, you've traveled, and you when you moved to Boulder, and everything just seemed to go right. Sometimes you learn more about yourself when things don't go right than when you're sort of on a roll.
I completely agree, yeah. Like, I had to try and get myself healthy, and I still wasn't healthy when I got back to Boulder at the end of last year, because my wife and I and our dog spent the majority of time in Europe last year, and I still hadn't really figured it out, and it wasn't until I saw the right person in January this year and sort of broke everything down and looked at the injury, like, as a whole, and not just the symptoms, but also, like, the cause. And and from that, like, now I've actually got that correct. I've fixed the fundamental problem that I was having and doing incorrectly. I feel like I'm back to the same running I was at my best, and now, but now I feel like I can actually be a better runner than I was prior to the injury. And that's, as you said, you learn a lot when things go wrong, because you have to reassess everything and work out which turn you took wrong and correct it.
So you start out the year, and you know, the field that you had in Oceanside, that's a great field, right? You got 14th there, nothing wrong with that. And then your race you just had, being on the podium at the U.S. Championships, right, in St. George. And it looks like, obviously Lionel Sanders is on one of those roles where, he wins, Panama, Oceanside, Memorial Hermann, St. George. He wins 4 70.3s to kick off the season. But he's up the road a little bit, and Sebastian's in second, and you're battling Kevin Collington for third place.
Uh-huh.
And, obviously getting on the podium, there's a big difference between getting on the podium at a U.S. championship than there is being in fourth place. Take us through that last part, that part of the run where you and Kevin are going back and forth.
Yeah, I actually came out of the water with Kevin. He came out on my feet, and we were in no man's land. We were a minute 30, minute 40 behind Cam Dyer, who led out the swim, and a lot of the contenders, apart from Sebastian Kinlays and Lionel Sanders, they were coming from behind us in the swim. But Kevin pretty much shadowed me the whole bike. I got us, basically back into the race. Tried to go with Kinlay and Sanders when they attacked. It just splintered. The race was just so intense, and with the weather conditions, it just, just blew everyone apart. So I got off the bike, in third with Michael Raylett, Kevin Collington, Cam Dye, Tim O'Donnell just behind. And, I was running with Kevin in fourth and fifth because Michael Raylett beat us out of transition. And I was like, this is good, just hold together. And we were running stride for stride, and Kevin's such a nice runner that it was actually an advantage to have him with me, because coming back from injury, I'm still not 100%, I'm still finding my rhythm and finding that sort of flow with my run, and he sort of got me into a really good stride. And we picked up Michael Raylett halfway through the run, and then we got 4 miles out, and I was still feeling pretty good, and that's my territory, I guess. That's where it started to rain again. The wind picked up, and that's when I grit my teeth, and that's when I really go to work. I love that when it's sort of just harsh elements, and it's just a battle. And I managed to shake Kevin, and close to a minute into him over the last 4 miles, and I took a little bit of time maybe out of Sebastian, but not much. Sebastian and Lionel were
they were in a different time zone. Right.
I know. We're all puzzled, especially Lionel. He's just, how do we beat this guy? He comes out of the water behind and rides through us, and then he runs the fastest. It's pretty impressive racing. And to beat Sebastian Kinlay, who's in pretty good shape right now,
really
a three-time world champion, I'm interested to see someone like Lionel go up against Jan. That would be interesting.
That'll be really well. You'll probably see that at in Australia.
Yeah, definitely.
So
hopefully, I've got front row seats to watch it.
Yes, you will. You could take notes while you're schooling those guys along the way.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So you're a guy who's been doing this racing for a while, and I was talking to Jesse Thomas after Wildflower this year. And he was just talking about how the racing has changed, especially on the bike. Guys are now just pegging it, the whole bike ride, figuring I might lose a little time on the run, but I can pick up, I can go 2, 3, 4 minutes faster than I used to go. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, definitely. The level of biking's just gone up in the last 3, 4 years. No one's really running especially fast these days. The bike is it's on. I follow my power numbers, and what would have normally got me a 2-3 minute lead off the bike is now putting me in contention, but that's about it. It's just getting me in the mix. It's definitely lifted, but then it's then it becomes a strong... I like it because it makes the run more of a strength run than a speed run, which is what I'm better at. I'm not super fast, as I said before. I like to grit it out and go into the Hurt Locker as much as I can. I like that. So it suits me. And Jesse as well, he's the same. He's a okay swimmer, very, very strong biker and an exceptional runner. So he probably enjoys this as well.
Exactly.
Watching people just explode on the run as he just picks them off. yeah.
So when you look back at your races, what do you look back at as your best day, the best day you ever had racing?
Probably it depends on the race. Like in a high pressure race,
yeah.
When I got third of the World Championships in Vegas 2.5 years ago,
yep.
That was I finally performed in a World Championship. I got fourth, I got fifth, I got I think another fourth. And I managed to crack the podium and beat, like I was in front of people like Potts and Tim Reed and
right.
Exceptional athletes. And I actually got on the podium. But it wasn't probably my best put-together race. That would probably have to be, I want to say, even Boulder in 2014. My coach and I had a plan. And I just did exactly what we decided on, and yeah, I went and won for the fourth time in Boulder, and held off Tim Don, and yeah, broke my course record again. And I think that was probably the best put together race I've done in my career.
So they just need to move the 70.3 races to someplace with altitude.
That might work.
The World yeah. Championships, and shouldn't they be up at about 6,000-7,000 feet?
Yeah, that could work, yeah. It's also because the race actually comes past, like, the end of my street. So
yeah.
I know every bump and turn on that course. And I guess I know how to ride it.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm doing it again in 5 weeks. So, and I'm going to have, every year I have to break my own course record to win it. So,
yeah, you do.
And it's going to be exactly the same this year. I think I'm racing people like Sam Appleton. This year, and the usual suspects like Ben Hoffman, Leon Griffin, Richie Cunningham. I'm sure there'll be a few others, and I think Callum Millwood will probably come back and
sure.
defend his title.
So, how many races have you gone to? I mean, it's funny. It used to be you could go to a race and there may be one or two other guys, top guys. Now it seems like every field is stacked. I mean, there's really, I don't remember last time I saw a soft pro field at any of these races.
I agree. Like, even like a 500-point race, which is the lower lower end of the 70.3 spectrum in terms of points and prize money, Lionel Sanders, there was four guys that rode, I think, 158 or 157.
Yeah.
And Richie Cunningham, who had won that race before and got second another time, he was like seventh. And he came back to Boulder. We're good friends. And he's like, yeah, I don't know what to do.
Right.
It was ridiculous. And that should have been a race that you could just have a solid result and go top three. But
yeah
if you don't race to your potential, you're not going to make it into the prize money. So it's tough. It's tough going at the moment to make ends meet, I think, for a lot of people.
So is this an Ironman year, a Kona year for you?
As I said, I'm racing Ironman Frankfurt it's just under 8 weeks now.
Yeah.
So I didn't do Kona last year, so I need the points. And to be honest, I need to do an Ironman that I get excited about.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to do Frankfurt. And as I said, Germany, they put on amazing events and that's got a huge history. And I'm going to be racing the likes of Sebastian Kienle or Tim O'Donnell's going this year as well. And that excites me. That's what gets me out of bed and wanting to train hard every day. So I'm doing that, and then I could answer your question, depending on how that goes. I'd like to.
Yeah.
I'd like to, yeah.
Definitely. Have you had to, now that you're, early 30s, have you had to change the way you train in order to give yourself more recovery? What I've heard from people in the past is, I can do the same workouts that I did when I was, 26, 27, but I just need more time off in between.
Yeah, like, I guess I moved, I changed, I used to coach myself up until 2 years ago. Then I started working with a coach out of Boulder, Neil Henderson.
Yep.
Who coaches Cam Dye and Flora Duffy
and Taylor Finney.
He's a renowned, and Rowan Dennis, and he's working with the BMC team. So he's a well-renowned cycling coach and triathlon coach. So he coaches us a lot more like cyclists, I guess, especially so quite a lot of intensity, but then a lot of really easy stuff. So it really, I probably do harder stuff, sessions, but I also do less volume, and when I go do my aerobic stuff, I do it very easy. Whereas before I used to train a little bit in the middle, which sort of, you don't recover, you don't get the aerobic effect, and you never really create like a higher ceiling, and build your engine to be bigger. You just sort of end up getting tighter.
Right.
So it's, I probably do less, less running intensity, definitely, but maybe I do a little bit more bike intensity just because biking's got so much faster now. But yeah, the run, definitely, I don't think I can handle, I don't go to the running track anymore. That's just not worth the risk. It's high risk venture to get on the running track these days. I do a lot more tempo, steady state running, use hills as my sort of resistance, that sort of thing.
The other thing I look at is it used to be, people would do maybe three or four Ironman 70.3 or half Ironman type of races a year. I mean, guys are doing, 8, 9, 10? They're treating these things like it's an appetizer. You guys are running half marathons like it's not a big deal. When you look at your schedule and look at all the racing that you guys do, is there a point where you're going, I'm doing, how many 70.3s am I planning on?
Yeah, no, it's true. And this comes back to what I was saying before, that I got a bit greedy, I think, 2014 leading into 2015. And look, you can do that for a while, but I think it's going to come back and bite you eventually. We're no better, no fitter than the guys 10 years ago, and they were only doing, as you said, 4, 5, 6 half Ironmans.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think if you want to do well in the big championship races, you can only do maybe 2 Ironmans a year and 4 or 5 70.3s. But if you're not worried about the world championships and you want to race at 90% all year, and you can go for your life. You can probably do 10 half Ironmans and 2 Ironmans a year.
Wow.
But you just won't reach that same peak. And if you don't go to Kona 100% or go to the World 70.3 Championships 100%, you're not even in the race.
You're wasting your time.
Not worth turning up. Exactly. So, it's basically the athlete's choice. And some athletes don't have a choice because they don't have the financial backing from sponsors or whatever to be able to just put all their eggs in the Kona basket or the World 70.3 Championships basket. They need to race to make a living, which is sort of where the boat I'm in this year. So Frankfurt has to go well to pay the bills and also to get points for Kona, because Kona's a big investment. You can't race much.
Yeah,
you can't race much leading into it, and not cheap. Generally you need to be there 2 weeks to at least, flights and food and whatever. Like, if you don't make top 10, you're going to come home with at least, $5,000-$6,000 debt.
In debt. I know. And what's interesting too, when you go through a year like you did last year, and like you said, it's not like you fell off the edge of the earth. You still had, some really nice results, but you're dealing with an injury all year. Sometimes when that stuff happens, you find out who your real supporters are, the sponsors who care about you, not just as an athlete, but as a person. Was that a little eye opening for you?
Yeah, it was. As I said, I'm definitely lacking in the sponsorship department this year, and I'm riding around on a bike with my bike from last year with stickers on it, like after a 7-year relationship. So
wow.
It's tough going. I was really fortunate in some good companies, really good companies like Blue 70 and Compress Sport, mm-hmm. and they basically jumped on board and were really happy to help me out. As I said, in terms of a big title sponsor, it's been a tough going for this year. But I'll prove myself this year and I'll get some good partnerships going that I really like. We're on the same page and we have the same values and want a long-term relationship, which is what I want with all my sponsors. But I guess some of the ones that I used to have didn't want that. They a little bit short-sighted, unfortunately, which is a bit disappointing. But that's all right. It just adds fuel to the fire for me to prove everyone wrong, and to show them what I can do. And just 2015, I was just a little bump in a very consistent career that I've had, which I've prided myself on. So anyway.
The cool thing is, it sounds like you're going to finish up the season with a trip to challenge Aruba. I was down there a couple months ago with Tim DeBoom and Mark Harriman's, and I think you're going to love it down there. Talk about quality people. You're going to have a great time.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited. It's a great way to finish off the year, and I love challenge races. I actually did, as my last race of the year, I did Challenge Sardinia. Last year, the island off Italy, the west coast of Italy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't finish because of my ankle, but I did lead off the bike by about 4 minutes, and it was the most amazing bike course you could imagine. I think it's probably the best bike course I've ever done.
Wow.
I've been racing for a long time. Yeah. It was pretty special. And the swim, I get as well, in the Mediterranean, like, you can't go wrong. And they looked after the athletes that participated. It's basically set in a really big resort that has sort of 4 or 5 hotels within that resort.
Yeah.
And so it accommodates families and, like, so everyone basically is doing the race. I don't know how many they got last year. Well over 1,000 all stayed in the resort. So you got to really mingle with the age group athletes. And the pros were all pretty chilled because it was end of October.
Right.
It was, just a nice place to finish your year, and it's an amazing place. And as you said, Aruba's going to be just as stunning and a great way to wrap up the season.
I love it. Hey, Joe, first of all, congratulations on the podium last weekend. It's very exciting. It's always nice to see nice things happen to nice people. And
no, thanks, Bob.
I know 2016 is going to be a great season for you. It's off to a great start, and you've got, Frankfurt, and then Worlds in Mooloolaba, and then hopefully Kona. So you've got some big things in front of you, but you certainly can make a big statement.
Well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate the support. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, it's so good. It's just I'm enjoying being healthy and racing back in the mix. And, St. George last weekend was just a huge breakthrough for me. I actually surprised myself. But it's so everything's on track. And, we'll hopefully chat later in the year. And hopefully it's still going well.
I love it. Joe Gambles has been our guest. Again, we are brought to you by ToughManTry.com. Everyone, EveryWon.org, coming up a half marathon 5K July 24th in Northern Cal. RunCatalina.com or Catalina Eco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 19th. Check out ChallengedAthletes.org to find out more about our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And all of our interviews are up on Babbittville.com. And on iTunes, and you can subscribe to our newsletter, Bob Babbitt's Endurance World, at Babbittville.com/newsletter. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.